meeting to order. The time is 8:04. Present, we have Representative Scalzi, Representative Guest, Co-Chair Myers, and myself, Co-Chair Morgan. Purpose of today's meeting is to just hear and discuss HB 24 and HB 118. Now, we've got the sponsor for both of the bills. Hot seat for the next 2 hours. We'll be hearing HB 24 first, and after that, HB 118. We've got the chair, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to give a very brief statement and then answer your questions. If you'd like me to proceed in that manner, I'd be happy to. Thank you. HB 24, it truly is a simple piece of legislation. I have a propensity for that which is simplistic. I would prefer that there be made nothing personal about that. It is a piece of legislation that allows for a local option regarding the usage of bed taxes, and it's no more than that. And so for me to continue to throw words at it would be a waste of your time, and I prefer not to do that. So if you have specific questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions from the committee? None? Anybody in the audience? Either for or against? We got anybody to testify? For or against? And none? Teleconference?
We got Anchorage too.
You got Anchorage?
Anchorage will be printing out here pretty quick.
Representative Whitaker, thank you. We spoke yesterday, so I'm pretty familiar with this, and you answered all my questions. The only thing that I'll ask you publicly was that what cities, communities do you see impacted by this? My understanding, Anchorage is not impacted. From what they we don't have sales tax. So.
My impression as well, Mr. Chairman, that the municipality of Anchorage is not affected by this. There are several communities around the state that are. I think there are 8. I cannot name them off the top of my head. But again, this provides them a local option to determine whether or not they want to contribute bed tax dollars toward a tourism marketing effort.
For the record, we have Representative Casula joining us at 8:47. Anybody? There's nobody signed up for that. Anybody in the audience to testify? Okay, at this time we'll go to the Fairbanks to testify on HB 24. Brett Carlson.
Good morning, Chairman Morgan.
Good morning.
And the rest of the committee, thanks for taking the time to hear and listen to the...
Before you continue, could I have you, I know I called your name, and title, please, for the record?
Thank you for keeping me in line. This is Brett Carlson, and I work with Northern Alaska Tour Company, which is a very small Fairbanks-based business that operates experiences in Alaska's Arctic. And as Representative Whitaker did say, HB 24 is a very simple bill, but it does address an issue that's of critical importance to the visitor industry. A very brief synopsis of the bill is that it's important to understand that since the 1970s, small visitor industry businesses in communities throughout the state of Alaska have relied on their local destination marketing organizations, CVBs or convention and visitor bureaus in larger towns, chamber of commerce in smaller towns, to help them compete in an increasingly competitive worldwide travel marketplace. Typically, the way these destination marketing organizations are funded is through a local tax of some sort. In most areas, it's a bed tax. And those taxes are often collected with the explicit intent of helping small businesses compete in the travel industry. An anomaly in the Alaska State Municipal Code, or Title 29, has the potential to create a situation in 11 of Alaska's organized boroughs where a visitor industry tax that's collected has been enacted originally with the intent of funding the visitor industry cannot be used for that purpose. And a very simple explanation of it is essentially Title 29 grants particularly second-class boroughs, where this has the potential to be the greatest problem. It grants second-class boroughs a non-area-wide economic development power, whereas logically, most bed taxes in second-class boroughs have been enacted on an area-wide basis. So there's no donuts, no tax donuts within this large area, and it creates an unlevel playing field. Because of this, Title 29 also says that a non-area-wide power can't be used to spend an area-wide tax. So that's the challenge. The reason why Fairbanks is concerned is it has come up as an issue in Fairbanks, and HB 24 would solve the problem. And as Representative Whitaker said, it's very important to emphasize HB 24 just gives communities the local option. It doesn't tell them they need to. It just gives them the option if the democratic process decides that they wish to spend their bed tax on destination marketing. So in conclusion, I would just urge support of HB 24. If you believe the visitor industry does bring positive economic and quality of life benefits to our state, if you believe small business should be allowed to compete in the growth of the visitor industry, then the HB 24 can help this happen. And I guess the very final thing is that this bill does have support throughout the state. All other visitor industries in other parts of Alaska have been aware of it. Statewide ATIA has passed a resolution in support of it. Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau is support of it. And to answer the question of Representative Meyer earlier, even in unified municipalities like Anchorage or Juneau or Sitka, this indirectly benefits them, as it's in Anchorage's best interest. For example, when we have a statewide marketing program that relies on local contributions for other places in the state, not just Anchorage, to be able to contribute to that program. And clearly, when you're a gateway community like Anchorage, marketing done by any community in the state also benefits Anchorage. So thank you for your time, and thanks for all each of you do to move our state forward.
Any questions for Brett? Hearing none. For the record, Representative Halko joined us at 8:09. Okay, also in Fairbanks is Debbie Tilsworth.
Hi, thank you very much. Debbie Tilsworth, and for the record, I work for the Riverboat Discovery and also have the pleasure of chairing the local chapter of the travel industry this year. I would just like to make a few comments about the timeliness of this bill. As we look to increasing the funding for the visitor industry, we have a number of challenges on our hands in Fairbanks. One of these is the very strong wish that we can get into the borough's budgeting process this year, and that is not allowable right now under the way the tax code is written. So So if there's any way for this bill to be moved along within the committee and then in the Senate in a timely manner, at the present time, our borough mayor is in the process of formulating a fiscal year '02 budget. And this title change would allow her and the assembly to include funding for destination marketing in the FY '02 budget. And I know Deb Hickok, who is also with us today of the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau, can speak to the urgency of the funding and the impact that this has on our local marketing efforts. So I would just urge you, if there's any way possible, to continue to move this along and allow us the opportunity in Fairbanks to include some very much needed funds for destination marketing in our budget for FY02. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration in looking at this bill.
Thank you, Debbie. Any questions for Debbie? For the record, Representative Mikulski joined us at 8:12. At this time, just to speed up the segment, is there anybody in Fairbanks that's on the telephone that's against this bill?
No.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. And just to speed up the process, I'll close the Fairbanks LIO. Any testimony? Any questions from the committee? Representative Halcro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, the kind of the broadness of the description here, line 5, sales tax levied upon room rentals, I'm assuming hotel, motel, bed and breakfast room rentals, and not I'm a landlord and own an apartment building and I'm renting you a room. Is there any concern about the broadness of that type?
Mr. Chairman, the title was changed as a result of a concern that the title was too broad. It was originally written as certain revenues, those certain revenues to be determined at the discretion of the local governing body. The title was tightened with deference to your concern. I use the term tightened to its current form. I'm not adverse to it being either tightened more, to be very specific, with regard to bed tax revenues, and I'm not adverse to it being broadened to certain revenues, which might lead you to believe that I'm ambivalent, which would be a correct assumption.
And I'm not quite sure in Fairbanks if they even tax your monthly rent payment on an apartment, do they? There's not, no, so
we do not.
My only concern would be somebody would be saying, hey, I own an apartment building and I'm renting out my rooms, and should a portion of that sales tax revenue be used for tourism marketing?
I suppose that question could be raised given that that tax weren't in place, but it's not, and knowing my own borough as I do, I'd be very surprised if that ever happened.
Tim, have you looked at this issue that Tam Cook raised in her March 17th memo about whether the North Star Borough has the power to conduct a campaign under Title 29? I just wondered if you might comment on that. I mean, it doesn't go precisely to the bill. It sort of goes to a broader issue.
Yes, I have looked at certainly her March 17th memo, Mr. Chairman. The essence of that memo, as I see it, is the question that was asked, which is alluded to in the first line, wherein it is stated succinctly, you asked whether the Fairbanks North Star Borough may use proceeds from a bed tax for a tourism marketing campaign. And her answer on the fourth line, at the end of the fourth line, is it may not. And that is under existing law. Obviously, what we're trying to do is correct that situation, and we do that, obviously, through the bill. So I'm trying not to be circular in providing you an answer, but at this point, that's the best answer I can give you.
Do you think that then covers the issue of whether it has the power under 2935-210, it's the broader scope issue.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions for
Representative Whitaker, Representative Pankowski.
Going back to Representative Halperin's point, don't we always just call it bed tax? Isn't that the common vernacular?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murkowski, yes. However, it was rewritten as you see it in its current form. And again, I'll repeat, I'm ambivalent as to whether or not it stays in its current form.
Written by lawyers or something?
Well, you being an attorney, I was very hesitant to be pointed, but the answer is yes.
Seems like it would be more straightforward if we called it bed taxes, but I think we can get the point of what is said, although I think that Representative Halper raises a good issue.
I agree, Mr. Chairman.
No question for Representative Whitaker? If not, what's the wish of this committee? What's your time?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 24 from committee with the attached fiscal notes and individual recommendation.
Our individual recommendations, I'd like to open these back up for AB 118, an act relating to a mandatory exemption from municipal taxes on churches and providing for
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. HB 118, again, is a rather simple bill. Currently, under statute, a exemption is mandated from municipal property taxes for Alaska's senior citizens, disabled veterans, widows and widowers who are 60 years of age. A one-time filing is allowed for non-senior residential property tax exemption, that is, disabled veterans, widows and widowers are allowed to file for an exemption one time, whereas senior citizens are required to file yearly. While that may not seem to be a significant imposition, in specific cases, and a few cases, it is. I'll give the example of a situation in Fairbanks wherein an elderly woman had not filed her property tax exemption for several years. She was evicted. Her property was taken by the borough, and the reason given was that she had not filed for her senior citizen property tax exemption. She was unable to understand the process and simply didn't get it. She had reached that point in her life. This bill simply allows local municipalities to establish their own procedure for filing for a senior property tax exemption. It does no more than that.
We have one.
Oh,
Stephen.
Representative Whitaker, I understand what you just said, that it's just the seniors that have to apply on an annual basis. And yet, looking at your sponsor statement, I got the impression, I mean, what it says is current Alaska statute requires the recipient of the senior citizen, disabled veteran, and widow, and widower's exemption to file an application each year in order to qualify. I didn't have a chance to look at the statutes between the time I read this last night and this morning. But is that incorrect, or what is it exactly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Murkowski, for pointing out an obvious error that at the same time that you've done that, so too has my trustworthy staff. The sponsor statement should stand as given, and my somewhat garbled explanation of it should not, and therefore your concern is well-founded, and thank you and my staff for correcting me.
So, as it stands now, all of them have to apply each year.
That is correct.
Is it the municipalities that can make the option currently that a senior or a disabled vet could just apply once?
No, and thank you for pulling me out of the fire. That is the essence of the issue. It is not a local option currently. It is mandated by state law that filing occur once per year.
Okay, and that's for everybody in the category. So what your legislation would do is require that if you're a senior, a widow, a widower, or a disabled vet, the application would be just once, just file it at one point in time.
Mr. Chairman, if I may ask my staff to come up with me, I'll be happy to answer the question. If my staff may answer the question, Mr. Chairman, I think we'll get to where we need to be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murkowski. I'm Lori Backus, legislative aide to Representative Whitaker. This does not change or mandate that the municipalities set their application process in any particular time frame. It allows them the option to choose to either require the filing to be every year, every 5 years, a one-time filing, whatever they choose is best for their local area.
And just again, so I'm clear, this applies to all those in that category, the disabled vets, the widower, the widow, and the senior citizens, not just the seniors.
Yes, it applies to the required, it applies to the statute that requires that property tax exemption, and so it does cover all three categories.
And then just one more. What do the municipalities think about this in terms of their, I'm assuming that the state, their, not their state assessor, but the municipal assessor's office, are they in favor of this? Does it reduce their paperwork? Are they ambivalent?
Again, Mr. Chairman, I think Ms. Backus can answer that much more so than I. She has had significant contact with both local assessors and statewide assessors.
Through the chair, Representative Murkowski, that's correct. I've spoken with the state assessors as well as our local borough assessors, and they don't have a problem with it. In fact, originally there was some discussion about requiring that it be a one-time filing, and they felt that that was something that they could deal with. The notion of having it be a local option as to how they set up the filing requirements or the application requirements isn't something that they've responded to us about yet.
Are we going to have any testimony from anyone from any assessor's office? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairman. I think I'll wait on my questions after the testimony.
Okay, we'll go to the teleconference. Anchorage, Steve Van Sant.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Steve Van Sant. I'm a state assessor with the Department of Community and Economic Development. Representative Whitaker is correct. We have had substantial conversations with Ms. Mackus on this bill, and we do appreciate him working with us on that. The section that they actually put in, originally the bill was going to be a one-time filing, and I think Lori actually took the initiative there and took some comments from the assessor and put in the established procedures and deadlines for the application. I think that goes a long way in helping some of the assessors with some of the concerns that they did have. Just so you know, most of you should have already gotten the 2000 Alaska tax bill, and in that is the overview of the senior citizen disabled veteran property tax exemption program for tax year 2000. For tax year 2000, that was a $28.2 million program with about 16,600 applicants. Almost 15,000 of those senior citizens and 1,700 or so were disabled veterans. The filing currently under existing law does require all seniors and disabled vets to file annually. Even under this bill, it will probably be a requirement that all disabled vets or most disabled vets do an annual filing simply because the percentage of disability does change. And so they are required each year to bring forth a letter from the veterans organization that they got their disability from showing the percentage of disability. So that will probably still require an annual letter for the disabled vet. The only area of the bill, I think, that has some of the assessors give some concerns was, one, the change of timely filing. The change on page 2, lines 5, 6, and 7, did require that they had to make a filing in that year. That's been removed, and it looks like they can file for any year for any prior year. That can give the assessor some concern, the fact that it would be difficult for them to make any observations as to whether or not the property actually met the exemption criteria in prior years. That's a little disheartening there. I think they would prefer to say that if a failure to timely file the initial application no later than March 31st of the assessment year would be more beneficial to them. The other issue that they did bring up, and I don't know if Mr. Carlson's also going to be on the line from Kodiak or not, but one issue he did bring up was the fact that sometimes we have applicants of this program who either move, sell, in some cases die. The assessor's office is not made aware of these changes. The property continues to be exempt for several years after that until somebody brings it to the forefront, and then the assessor finds out. The one section that Mr. Cross would like to see put in, and I agree, would be that when the property becomes ineligible for the exemption, that a lien will attach for those taxes in prior years, so the taxes aren't exempted when the property is not eligible for the exemption. Other than that, I'm available for any questions that the committee may have, and I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Steve?
Thanks. Could you repeat the end of what you've just said about filing the lien? What would the lien be for?
If an individual that had been in the program, let's say, died and it went into and in many cases we have trust setting out there. The trust don't always let the assessor's office know that the individual is no longer eligible for the property tax exemption. And we've had some cases for 3 to 5 years. This would allow the taxes to accrue from the time of ineligibility to current date. So the taxes would be due for all those prior years.
That's the way current law is.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Okay, and your concern with this is that you might not get the notice, so that you're going to need more statutory authority to be able to get a lien. Wouldn't you have that already?
Through the chair, I'm not sure that we're looking for more authority. I think it's more of a notice to applicants that should the property become ineligible, that the prior year's taxes will be owed on the property and will become a lien.
So you don't have any suggestion for change to this bill? It's just something you wanted to bring up?
I don't have any suggestions at this time. We can certainly work with the sponsor and get some language to him.
Well, wouldn't this be something that you could just do, though? You don't really necessarily need to change the bill, do you?
Through the chair, no, ma'am. I'm not sure we need to change the bill. If we have it on the record, that should suffice. There may be some assessors who disagree with me there, but if we have it on the record through the minutes here, that would suffice, and we could put it in the initial applications.
Just to clarify the record, then. I mean, I think you already have the power. I mean, certainly when you're ineligible to receive the exemption, you can't get it. If you've died, it's going to go to your estate or your trust or whatever. So at that point, the only tricky part for you may be that you wouldn't have that filing to trigger your knowledge every year. But I think you certainly have the statutory ability to file a lien if you haven't gotten your proper taxes. So, I mean, just my reading of the statute, unless something else was said. Thanks.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you. And thank you, Steve. You know, my concerns are very similar to Representative Kurtula's, but I see that, you know, it says each municipality shall by ordinance establish procedures and deadlines. That is the local option right there that the governing body is going to take care of it. So if the local assessor has a problem with filing deadlines or timelines or a rebate on, you know, past overpayment or underpayment, they should be able to write that themselves. And I don't see where it should be any concern to the state at that point. Do you?
Through the chair, Representative Scalzi, I appreciate your comments. I think you know as well as I do, the assessors hold very little political clout sometimes when it comes to these exemptions. And while I would like to agree with your synopsis, sometimes political pressure pushes them out in the outfield there. So we can always give you our best advice and what we think administratively will work, but it's not always taken.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Steve, for your testimony. Let me just make sure I understand the program. I believe the intent of the program when it was first set up was to encourage and reward our elderly who lived in Alaska to continue to live in Alaska rather than move to somewhere where it's warmer, maybe Arizona or California. And my concern would be that, that if they only had to file once every 5 years, what would prevent abuse in the sense that people would live in Arizona, but they would keep their property up here and rent it out and continue to get the senior citizen property tax exemption even though they don't live here? And maybe that's not our concern. Maybe that would be the local government's concern.
Through the chair, Representative Myers, just a little history on the program. It started back in 1973. There were 911 applicants in the program, and I think we had less than $200,000 that were exempted. That has grown over the years. Originally, it did have a $10,000 annual income prerequisite in order to meet the eligibility criteria. And then I think in 1985, the Disabled Veterans and the Widowers language were added to the program. And it has grown immensely since that time, from 911 in 73 to 16,600. Right now, the Assessor's Office utilized the annual filing for a preliminary indication of whether or not individuals are living on a property. That certainly doesn't catch everyone, but in many cases, the return addresses on the applications will be somewhere outside. That certainly alerts the Assessor's Office to begin an investigation. In many cases, we have individuals' neighbors who will call and complain that the individuals are not living on the property continuously. So the assessor will launch an investigation on that. While I don't know the numbers, my guess is that those total number of individuals who create problems in this program are very small. Out of 16,000 plus, I'm sure it's less than 2 or 3%. That do that. So for all those other individuals, we don't have a problem with it. It's just those few that we do. And there will be no methodology other than the initial application for the assessor to find that unless somebody brings it to the attention. So those that small percentage that do try to take advantage of several states' exemptions will probably get away with it for a few years until somebody turns them in, and that would be the only methodology that the assessor has. Although, I take that back up. We did talk with Lori. Under the procedures that the municipality can make on this program, there could be authority put in there when the assessor believes that somebody may be taking advantage of the program and they're not truly eligible for it. They certainly could begin an investigation and require annual filing requirements for them. So it could work out, but the again, the number is not that large. It's those few that do make the program hard to administer.
Thank you. And then also, what is the requirement to be eligible? Is it similar to the permanent fund that you have to, as long as you have the state, so many days, and if you are, then you're not eligible?
It's going to be the primary resident.
Through the chair, if I might, right now, the requirement is that an individual has to be a senior citizen 65 years of age or older as of January 1st, or a disabled veteran with a 50% service-connected disability as of January 1st, of the assessment year for which the exemption is sought. This has to be the primary place of abode, and that's basically it with the statute. Now, the Alaska Association of Assessing Officers has drafted a standard, which is voluntary statewide, that says an individual must live in, and we have pretty much mirrored other language for the senior citizen longevity bonus that was out there. It requires 185 days residency in the house in order to maintain the exemption. There's several parts of the standard, and if any of those parts are not met, then that causes the assessors to launch an investigation and probably deny the exemption. Again, though, that is voluntary. It's not mandatory at this time. We are in hopes of bringing it forward as a regulation after we've had it in place for a few years and see how it's working. So far, it seems to be working well, but that's the criteria that we're working on right now.
Thank you.
Representative Bukowski.
Thank you. So you've got this voluntary standard out there that you're hopeful you can implement statewide, but if we make this a local option, essentially it will be up to the municipalities by ordinance to establish these things. So you could have Fairbanks saying that there's no standard. There's no requirement that you actually be in the home for any period of time, and then in Anchorage, they could adopt the voluntary standard of 185 days. Am I confused?
Through the chair, Representative Murkowski, no, that is exactly right. If this does pass, we would suggest to all municipalities that they adopt standards such as this, but obviously it's going to be up to each individual municipality.
Well, thanks. But looking at the statute, Representative Whitaker's bill isn't touching the primary residence and permanent place of abode section. That's going to stay in place. You can't change that. This is just changing the application and the form. I mean, you're not allowing somebody by municipal ordinance to give someone the right to live outside and still apply for the property tax exemption. That's not going to happen under this bill. The primary abode, place of residence, isn't touched by this bill. So am I misunderstanding, Mr. Van Zandt?
Through the chair, no, this bill just simply states that by ordinance bill established procedures for filing the application. That would narrow it down, obviously, yes.
Thank you.
But the application, for example, in Anchorage, currently their code requires that an individual live in the home 30 days prior to the first of the year. That does parallel somewhat to what the state statute requires. They've actually made it a little stricter than what other municipalities do. And this certainly wouldn't change that. You know, I'm looking at it. This is aimed at just the application.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Steve? Representative Murkowski?
Thank you. I'd like to go back to the concern that you raised about retroactivity. You made a suggestion that we insert language that states that you've got to, if you fail to timely file the initial application, but you raised a point about retroactivity that I'd like to hear a little bit more about. Is your concern that an individual could essentially say, you know, I've been here for 5 years and I just failed to file an application because I didn't know about it and get essentially a rebate on their taxes for the past 5 years?
Through the chair, Representative Murkowski, that's exactly the concern we have. Currently, the statute reads that basically they can make an application during that year, even if it's late. If they have show good reason, and the assembly or the governing body can direct the assessor to accept his timely file for that year. The bill does change the language, remove that language where it says not later than the timely filing, not later than that year. And what I guess our concern is that somebody, and we do have those individuals who come in on an annual basis and request that an exemption be granted for prior years. Under this, that certainly might be appropriate. And so my suggestion was, if a failure to timely file the initial exemption application by a date not later than March 31st of the assessment year has been waived, well, then it can be done. Otherwise, we are looking at opening up for prior year's taxes.
Okay, thanks.
Well, this is just a philosophical question, but I'm not certain I see anything wrong with that. If you've got somebody that completely qualifies and for one reason or another is too elderly or infirm or just doesn't know about it, it still looks like this is within your statutory authority to not allow it, but at least it gives you the option of being able to take into account those cases of true hardship. So, I mean, am I reading that correctly? This just gives you the ability to go back and look at it, whereas now you wouldn't have that ability, am I right?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Steve? Hearing none, any more questions for the sponsor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might just point out that the questions and answers have been useful. It takes us to the point that this committee has to decide if a state law, pardon me, should preclude a local governing body from making the types of decisions that we're talking about. Regarding retroactivity, the bill would allow that to be a local decision as opposed to a statewide decision.
regarding the filing procedures, that then becomes, given the passage of this bill, becomes a local option. It's no more than that. The dire consequences that may be attributed to the statewide adoption of something of this nature are simply not germane, because the local governing body will make a determination of any procedure that will be in effect. And so I would ask the committee that they seriously consider the bill, and thank you for your time.
I certainly speak very strongly in favor of this bill. One of the things that Representative Whitaker alluded to earlier was a case where they could not make that, could not assist an elderly person who had failed to file timely. I have personally been involved in several of those, and there's nothing more heartfelt than not being able to do anything, especially a person that's on assisted living or has, in one case, I remember the husband had cancer, and there was nothing we could do. The statutes didn't allow it. And we have to remember, too, as the state, our duty here is to make sure that we are protecting this mandate, the mandate of exemptions for senior citizens and veterans. This is an expansion of that, if anything. It's given the municipalities an expansion to exempt, and it's their option. It certainly is their option to do so. The revenues, none of this revenues is going to affect the state anyway. This is all local dollars. If the state wants to step up to it and mandate like they did to begin with, and then I think that they should pony up the dollars. So anyway, if we all keep in mind that, what's that?
Let's amend it.
Not today, but but I think we always keep in mind that local options good, mandates are bad. We can go on that premise there. Because I know the state doesn't like federal mandates any more than the local governments like state mandates. So anyway, I hope we do pass this.
Co-Chair Meyer? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Goldie, now I'll have to remember now we're wearing our other hat, but the state hat. But certainly the unfunded mandate that was passed by the state dealing with senior citizen property tax was a concern with the Anchorage and the Anchorage Assembly, Anchorage city government, because it's about a $15 million hit per year. So it's a big item, but certainly it's something that's very much supported at the local level and something they want to continue. But I would agree with my colleague from Representative Shelby in the sense that if we are going to pass this down to them now, let's at least give them the authority and the right to set up their own guidelines and rules. So I speak in support of this also.
Any more questions for Representative Whitaker? If not, what's the wish of the committee? Representative
Mr. Chair, I move that we move from this committee House Bill Number 118 with the zero fiscal note and individual fee.
Any objections? Hearing none. HB 118 is moved out of the committee in reason affairs.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Do it. I was going to say, do it. Lori. Thank you.